This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Intensity, Chronicles of Nick, by Sherilyn Kenyon. Narrated by Holter Graham. The Meaning of Time. When the world was new, and time was young, there were no guardians for the gates. In the beginning there was no need. Being fluid and flexible, time for many creatures wasn't a linear experience at all. Rather, sentient beings moved forward and back at their whims and leisure. They could be born in the future and yet die in the past. To them, the ability to move back and forth, forward and back, was the same as breathing. They thought nothing of it. For mankind, who was born without such privilege, the concept was always a hard one to grasp. To those who can bend time, the idea of a rigid, linear lifetime without such freedom was just as inconceivable. These creatures didn't understand man's obsession with measuring and preserving what to them was an infinity of interwoven circles that bent back upon themselves with fluid ease. But as with all things, abusers were born. Rather than being grateful for the abilities they had, they chose to prey on those who lacked them. They stole time from those who could least afford to lose it, and used it as currency, held it over the heads of those who needed it. More than that, the abusers shifted history for their own gain, and created paradoxes and changes that ill affected the entire world. The entire universe. It impacted everyone, even the gods. The ancient writers claimed the original Zeitjager was born not of a mother, but from just such calculated cruelty. When a demon abused time to hunt and kill his first victim for purely selfish reasons, that blood spilled in the name of hatred and violence hit the innocent ground of Mother Earth, and mixed with her fertile soil, to create a blood-red mud that made the firstborn golem. With no other emotion to nurture it than such malignancy, the golem became an insatiable nightmare that preyed on anything with a beating heart. It became a conscienceless monster with an insatiable hunger for blood and bone. Until the gods stepped in and gave the monster a soul. Worse, they gave masters to those monsters and assigned them a purpose, enslaved them for their own needs, and made time a linear requirement for almost all creatures, everywhere. One with rules and laws. One with dire consequences for any who dared to tamper with its new, rigid sequence. Now tampering with it was something that not even the gods could do with impunity. Tread not with time, for it slays us all in its own due course. Prologue. The end will begin. It always does. On the wind and with stinging pain, faster than you can see and always when least expected. Enemies will come and they will go, forever seeking to bring you low. But stand you must, and in even fewer trust. Thyself alone, thy heart of stone, one faith, one truth, one war. And so it was long ago and centuries in our future, one Malachi son who began his race, whose true love and devotion to his precious Rubati caused them all to be cursed forever. So it began. So it will end. One Malachi son cursed to destroy the world because of the love of one woman, or to save it, because through her faithful heart he learned of salvation and forgiveness. His choice: to defy his destiny or embrace his fate, to build or destroy. The same decision that all humanity faces from the moment of birth, a road wide open to all, that narrows with every decision made until we make the final one that ends our days with the last exhale we take to extinguish the candle on our lives forevermore. Pawn or master, choose wisely, or perish from the foolishness of that last poor decision, the immovable rock or the unstoppable force. In truth, we are both. Situations have dictated and will dictate which we must be in order to survive. Today, we are bitten, yet yesterday we bit someone else. Tomorrow has yet to tell us which role will be ours, for it is in flux and could fall to either side, biter or bitten. Life is ever a complicated symphony of catastrophes, ever seeking to lay us low and lift us higher. And no one has ever understood this better than the Ambrose Malachi. Born Nicholas Ambrosius Aloysius Gaucher. Many things to many people. Some friend, boyfriend, squire, brother, dark hunter, Malachi, demon, husband, father. Betrayer, destroyer of the world, or could be savior. Nick stared at the stark words that condemned him. As harsh as they were made twice as bad by the fact that they'd been written in his own handwriting, in blood, and they struck him like a blow. With this he couldn't argue. His clairvoyance was flawless. As he stood beside himself in the future, looking down at the words he was writing in his grimoire. "How did I get here?" he whispered. He still didn't know. Because the future isn't set in stone. His best friend Acheron's voice teased him from deep inside his mind. Every decision made impacted the next, an endless rippling stream of indecision. One moment, he'd been a clueless kid in high school. The next, he'd been a willing servant squire for the dark hunter Kyrian of Thrace. One who'd help shield the immortal warrior from humans, while Kyrian protected them from the demons who preyed on their lives and souls. The next thing Nick had known, he'd become a dark hunter himself, only to learn Menyara, his voodoo godmother he trusted implicitly, was actually an ancient goddess who'd bound his own powers and hidden him from his demonic father and others who would kill or use him. That his true destiny was to become the demon who ate the world whole. That had been his first lifetime. Until he came back and tampered with it. Or did he? Man, Nick could lose his mind with this, because what Ambrose, his future self, had failed to tell him was the secret he'd learned last night. The secret he now knew. For the first time ever, he understood Tabitha Devereaux's tattoo from his vision of their future fight, and why she'd placed it on her arm. Not for her, as a motto to herself, a note to him to serve as a reminder.
Famra e sue quaque fate. She creates her own destiny.
That was why Ambrose Malachi had stopped in the middle of the battle to stare down at it, why he'd screamed out in agony on the day he killed her. I made myself the monster. My choice. Son, friend, boyfriend, squire, brother, dark hunter, Malachi, demon, husband, father, betrayer. Destroyer of the world. Or savior. My choice alone. As with all things, the future would be made by the very decisions he made today, good, bad and indifferent. He was the master spinner of destiny, and he alone would bear it out.
He will kill you.
Cyprian Malachi paused as those dire words hung in the air. A slow, insidious smile spread across his face as he looked up from his homework to see the obsequious demon servant who stood on his left.
You don't know my father at all, do you?
The demon stepped back into the shadows, cringing, if the truth were known. Not that he blamed the creature. It was always good to fear him, as he valued nothing and no one. That was the curse of the Malachi bloodline that he'd inherited from Ambrose. They loved nothing, and no one, except for his father. Ambrose had been cut from a different Malachi cloth. Nicholas Ambrosius Aloysius Gaucher, the so-called Ambrose Malachi, had been a unique creature unto himself. Out of all the Malachi born after their downfall and curse, he'd been the only one to ever know a mother's love, the only one to have a family and friends. Something that baffled Cyprian to this day, as no one had ever liked him. He'd never understood his father's life or the loyalty of all those who died by Ambrose's side when they'd faced off in final battle all those centuries in the future. Even now, he could see them, as that fateful day had dawned, lined up for battle. Both sides stood ready at the head of their armies. Cyprian's dark Mavromino forces had salivated for his father's good colossum blood. The Ambrose Malachi had stood strong at the front, with his wife and her brother at his side. For the first time in all of history, the Nazaru and Erelim had ridden to fight with a Malachi and his generals at their head, as had the last Sephiroth, brothers and sisters in arms. All the forces of good and light had aligned themselves against Cyprian's demonic army. The primal sources of evil and night shadow were ready and more than willing to finally take them all to their graves.
Remember,
Cyprian's mother had whispered in his ear as she prepared herself for war.
Your father isn't as strong as he appears. Your mere presence here weakens him with every breath you draw, while it strengthens you so that you can defeat him. Not to mention, half his army still thinks that he's betrayed them. It will take nothing for them to turn against him now.
Because they had no idea that Cyprian had been born, or that he and his mother had been playing havoc with all of them and their lives by masquerading as his father. He'd been having quite the time playing Ambrose at all their expenses. None of the poor fools had been the wiser, not even his father. Unable to tell the two of them apart, the sheep had followed after him and done his bidding. They'd been duped without knowing. He made fools of them all, and he laughed at them the entire time because they didn't know better. For all his powers, the Ambrose Malachi wasn't impervious to everything. He had a great blind spot whenever it came to those he trusted and called friend and family. And Cyprian's mother was an ancient goddess of supreme power and vengeance. She'd promised Cyprian long ago that this day of reckoning would come. And here they were. Here they were. Facing off, so that he could rise to power and his father could die by his hand and exact revenge for her. That was the way of the Malachi curse. The father perished whenever the son came of age, and he killed his father to take his place. Only one Malachi could live at a time. Today Ambrose would die, and Cyprian would rise.
Embrace your fate.
And Cyprian had gleefully seized it that day on the field, when he'd killed Ambrose. Now he was in the past, to make sure that day in the future came, one way or another. And there was nothing Nicholas Gaucher could do to stop him. Chapter 1. This was a stupid idea. But then stupid ideas were Nick Gaucher's specialty. In fact, when God had been giving them out, Nick had gone back not only for seconds, but thirds and fourths. Probably fifths, too. Just ask anyone, they'd all agree. Especially his mother and friends. And none more so than his girlfriend, who was currently staring at him as if he'd lost his last three remaining brain cells. He probably had. Not that they'd ever worked particularly well whenever Cody was around. What with her tight jeans that hugged a very nice posterior, and those soft shirts she fancied that drained every last bit of blood from his teenage Cajun mind and left it quite unable to function at full capacity. So even if he'd been a NASA rocket scientist, he'd have been rendered a blubbering idiot around her, anyway. He took comfort with that knowledge, little bit though it was.
"Oh, Nick, you can't be serious."
Nakota Kennedy crossed her arms over her ample chest and blinked those gorgeous green eyes at him as if to say, "Son, you're a flaming moron." Yeah, of course he was. And dang it anyway, how could she be so attractive while calling his meager intelligence into question? Yet there was no getting around it. He loved her. Every inch of that tanned, delectable caramel skin that tempted him a lot more than he ever wanted to admit. Every bit of those Cupid's bow lips he could spend the rest of his life kissing. Provided his mama didn't catch him, that was. No boy needed a lecture that stern. Not to mention all her soft, curly brown hair he always wanted to bury his face in. No doubt about it, he would always be a fool where his Cody was concerned. And he was willing to die to keep her safe. Whatever it took. Running into burning buildings, dodging traffic and irate madre phone calls, even facing ticked-off demons and the apocalypse with nothing more than his meager wits as weapons.
"I've got to do this, Cher. It's a moral imperative. It's a grand stupidity."
He touched her chin and grinned roguishly.
"Nah, it's a matter of honor."
Rolling her eyes, she let out a long-suffering sigh that probably had to do with the fact that she'd been hanging with him all afternoon without a break. He couldn't blame her there, as a lot of people made that exasperated sound around him whenever they spent this much time in his presence, especially his maternal unit and his ancient Greek boss, Kyrian Hunter. And no one more so than the Dark Hunter Acheron and Nick's demon bodyguard Caleb. They both swore he could test the patience of Job and Gandhi. Cody growled at him,
"Fine. Go on and do it, you stubborn Cajun beast. Not like anyone can ever talk you out of anything so stupid once you've set your mind to it anyway. But when you get a bellyache, I don't want to hear it. So don't come crying to me for Pepto-Bismol later. I don't care how cute and sexy you are. I will not allow you to wear me down for any sympathy this time. Not over something you know better than to do. You can just suffer in silence. Alone."
She stepped aside, clearing the way for him.
"If you really think you can out-eat a Karanti demon, go for it."
Nick tisked as he stepped around her to slide into the empty folding chair and inclined his head to see me, who was already waiting, with a dozen plates of beignets for each of them.
"Oh, I'm ready. You ready, Ms. Seamy?"
Decked out in her black leather corset and purple ruffled skirt, the goth demon grinned.
"I's born ready, half-demon boy. The Seamy done got some barbecue sauce dug down and is rearing to go. Let's do this."
Nick adjusted a plate and a glass of milk.
"All right, then dang be he who first cries halt. Enough. I plan to eat till I snap the button off my jeans and make it a deadly weapon."
He popped his knuckles in preparation. Off to the side of their table, Cody continued to growl at both of them. It was quite the impressive noise.
"What's going on?"
Caleb asked, as he came up to stand behind Cody on the sidewalk that looked out toward Jackson Square from the Café du Monde, where Nick sat with Simi, who'd already jumped the gun and started chowing down. Cody gestured at them. "They're actually having an eat-off. Can you believe this?" Caleb laughed.
"He's an idiot, if he thinks for one yachta second he can compete against a Carante."
"Don't I know?"
"And yet you're dating him. Good job, woman. Way to raise those expectations. Yesterday, or in your case, years in the future, you were a demigod warrior saving mankind from the demonic horde out to annihilate them. From that to baby Malachi sitter. You didn't just fall off your high and mighty pedestal, Highness. You hit the ground and splintered to pieces, like Humpty Dumpty."
"Yeah, thanks." Caleb held his hands up.
"Hey, I don't judge. I fell just as far. Besides, I found a woman willing to actually marry my cantankerous demonic hide. After that, I will question no one's intelligence for the man in their life. Ever. Milo really got the short end of it all."
Nick swallowed his beignet whole before he glared at his demon bodyguard, who was also supposed to be his best friend. At least, that was what Caleb claimed, and how the theory went, though on days like this he definitely wondered. At well over 6 feet, Caleb Malphus had hair as dark as Simi's and skin the same color of caramel as Cody's. Yet the one thing that irritated Nick about his running mate, aside from Caleb's rather caustic and biting barbs he never kept to himself and that were usually directed at Nick, were those Hollywood good looks that always left Nick feeling extremely inadequate. Of course, that was just a front. While Caleb might appear tall, dark, handsome, and composed, his natural state of being was as an orange-fleshed, fanged demon. Yeah, he was a total freak when he didn't have his human disguise up. "Don't you have something better to do, like raise a village, haunt a house, torment the damned? And I don't mean me. This is New Orleans, you know. There's a lot more condemned folks here than just my little Cajun hide. Look around. I'm sure you can find a lot more worthy target for your venom, surely?"
"Yeah, but it's so much more fun to scare a little boy who's afraid of clowns."
Caleb flashed an evil grin at him. Nick shifted indignantly, as he knew exactly what Caleb was referring to, and he didn't appreciate it in the least. "Hey, now, that thing ain't no clown I'm afraid of. It's a Mardi Gras jester. Get your terms straight, old man. Your senility's showing again. Besides, it's evil and talks under the light of your magic. And you know it, so don't you be hassling me over a well-founded fear about Mr. Creepy and his little head on a stick. That thing's nasty, and whoever put it in the middle of a tourist district where they got little kids walking by it all the time ought to be tied naked to a Mardi Gras float on a cold, rainy day and left there to be mocked. Just saying. It's all kinds of wrong." And it wasn't like Nick was the only person alive with coulrophobia. That fear was quite common and normal. Maybe not for a Malachi demon who could tear a clown apart, but still. Nick hadn't known he was the Malachi until many years after he developed his coulrophobia phobia on a stick. By then his fear had become second nature. Caleb made a rude, dismissive noise before he passed a snide stare to Cody.
"You know he's still having nightmares about that night."
At least Cody defended him. "I'm still having nightmares about that night. I don't fault him on that account. It was pretty gruesome."
"Yeah. And his father, the baddest Malachi ever born, had died in that battle. And all of them had been wounded. The night they'd faced the talking jester with the tiny head and the demon crew had been that terrifying."
"Thank you, Shug."
Nick kissed the air in her direction before he picked up another beignet and shoved it in his mouth whole.
"But I can't watch this."
She turned her back and shuddered. "I'm getting diabetes just being here."
"And losing respect for your boy by the heartbeat," Caleb added.
To Nick's immediate cry of, "Hey!" Cody still ignored them both. And neither of that kept Caleb from his merciless quest to have fun at Nick's expense.
"You're a ghost," Caleb reminded her. "You can't get diabetes."
"So you say. I'm willing to debate it." She shivered again, even though she couldn't see their contest any longer. "I can't watch this insanity. See me? You got my boy covered?" Simi doused another plate of beignets with barbecue sauce.
"Course I do, Akri Cody. The Simi won't let no demons or nothing else eat your demon boy or hurt him on my watch. Promise! Cross my heart with barbecue sauce on top!"
"Thank you, Miss Simi. I'll see you two later." Nick licked at the sugar on his fingertips as he watched Cody head off in the direction of her house. He cut a meaningful stare toward Caleb. "Speaking of, aren't you afraid your house guests are gonna set fire to something? Like the whole entire planet? Now that all three of the evil Celts are together and alone without adult or any kind of responsible supervision?" Caleb went pale. "Yeah, clowns don't scare me. An unsupervised war god, hellhound, and banshee? This could have nuclear-level meltdown repercussions. Only thing worse would have been to leave Bubbo with them. See you later." Wiping his hands down the leg of his jeans, Nick tried not to be too obvious, but he couldn't help the intense way he stared after them both, making sure they were completely out of sight before he returned to see me. He brushed his dark brown hair back from his eyes. "Okay. I think we're safe now." Simi looked up with a slight pout, which was made twice as adorable, given that her mouth was covered in powdered sugar and barbecue sauce. He didn't know why, but that, combined with her black and red cybergoth pigtails, made her look more like a kid his age than a demon who was thousands of years old. And while her speech was unorthodox to most ears, it came from the fact that English wasn't her native or primary tongue. Karante was. Unlike the Malachi, who could speak all languages with ease, she sometimes had trouble navigating between the two languages, especially with subject-verb agreement, something that often caused her to ramble as she tried to make sense of words that baffled her with their similarities. To her, many of them were superfluous and unnecessary, as in humans should be able to follow her meaning simply by the context, and if they couldn't, well, to quote Simi, "poo on you." Not that Nick minded her random jumps in logic or sequence. While he might understand and speak all languages, he was most fluent in gibberish most days anyway. And he should get special bonus points for speaking in rapidly fluent stupidity, at least according to his mom and most of his teachers. If there was a wrong thing to say at a wrong time, he had a PhD in it. Dr. Nick Dumbutt, that was him.
"What?"
Simi battered her eyelashes.
"You mean we gotta go now?"
"They might come back if we don't."
"Well, prove to that!"
Simi sighed heavily in her own obvious disappointment.
"And here was the Simi, all happy with her eats. You a mean demon boy to drag the Simi away mid-feastery."
"That's what they tell me." And it was what he was trying his best to avoid. That and ending the world as they knew it. He'd really like to die centuries from now without causing the world to go with him on his way through the pearly gates. Nick winced as that cold reality slapped him hard for the 10,000,000th time. He missed the days when he'd looked forward to a normal future of routine college, wife, kids, 9-to-5 job, and growing fat, old, and complacent with the world around him. When he'd been ignorant of his true destiny and future role in the larger universe. It sucked to know that you would one day be the end of all living things. At least, that was what Cody and Caleb had led him to believe, but now they didn't know anymore. It was why he needed Simi to take him to Olympus so that he could meet his half-brother, the Sleep God, and ask Madoc about time travel and consequences. Nick needed answers, and he didn't want anyone to interfere with the real stupidity he was planning. which was exactly what Caleb and Cody would do if they were here. They'd stop him from being even more suicidal than what he already was, warn him to stay away from Maddock, and tell him that the last thing he needed was to cross those lines. But as Cody had noted, he didn't listen whenever he had his head set on something. Simi tucked her barbecue sauce into her coffin-shaped purse, then wiped her mouth.
Okies, whenever you're ready.
I was born ready. For being an idiot. Nick braced himself for their trip through the dimension portals that he hated so much. Simi blinked her eyes and jerked her head like a bird. He felt that cold, familiar, weird fluttering in his stomach that he got any time he had to cross into other planes or dimensions. Faster than he was prepared for, kaleidoscope colors twisted and blended and then quickly sorted themselves out. It was the strangest head trip, like throwing hot crayons into a blender and leaving the lid off, something Nick didn't advise anyone doing unless they really wanted their mother to disown them or ground them for the rest of their natural-born lives. And it took him a second to get his bearings, especially since this wasn't where he was expecting to end up. Yeah, not by a long shot. Confused, he glanced around the green and dark orange room that was way out of context. Had they taken a wrong turn at the bright light on the left, or was this something else? He'd assumed all of Olympus would be similar to Artemis's Greek temple, where he'd met the goddess before. Big columns, lots of white and gold, delicate marble things everywhere that made him extremely nervous as he was forever banging into stuff and knocking it over, because he never knew where his limbs ended these days. That it would have some frescoes, gaudy paint, weird fauna and robed attendants who were way too happy, given the unpredictable natures of the beings they served, that it would at least have something remotely Greek to it. Yet this place contained nothing close to that. This was much more organic and dark and red. Contemporary, more akin to a Kurazukuri home. So much so, he half expected a Pokemon or Team Rocket to come flying out at any moment and run him over, or some unexpected Yakuza attack. Yeah, it definitely had a Japanese feel to it, right down to the bright, hand-painted rice wallpaper and austere futon furnishings. There was even an ornate orange and green kimono hung on the wall to his left, and an antique yoroi hitsu beside it. Scowling in confusion, he turned toward the Karante demon. Seem? Where exactly are we? Did you mean to bring me here? Because this was definitely not Kansas, and he was feeling about as lost as Toto wandering off the yellow brick road. He just hoped they weren't about to encounter some weird, ticked-off wicked witch or a herd of screeching flying monkeys dressed like funky blue bellhops. Better yet, he hoped no one dropped a house on top of him, because that was the last thing he needed right about now, and it would definitely ruin his already screwed-up day. Although Simi did have on black and white striped leggings, maybe she had more to fear than he did. Simi adjusted the strap on her coffin-shaped purse.
Well, the Simi knows what you said you wanted to go and visit with them nasty Greek god people who were all so irritating. But so then I got to thinking what you really wanted to ask about, and so I thought...
Simi, what are you doing here?
The deep, thunderous voice radiated through the room with so much preternatural energy that it almost tripped Nick's Malachi blood against his will. Indeed, it took everything he had to stop his wings from unfurling and exposing him in front of the stranger. Something that would be about as embarrassing as his teachers calling him to the board during inconvenient moments at school when he'd been ogling Cody instead of his chem or lit book.
The fact that his Malachi blood detected that ancient, invincible power and wanted to react to it set the last of Nick's nerves on edge.
Which meant this guy was old. More than that, he'd have to be some kind of strong warrior demon for Nick's body to have reacted like this. The stranger could probably kick his butt without effort. Forget a house falling on him. That might actually be a far more humane death than this dude setting claws or fang to him. And there was no doubt that this beast could take him in a fight and make it seriously hurt. Standing eye to eye with him, which was no, pardon the pun, small feat, he was like a super-ripped ninja, with the kind of toned muscles that Kirian, Caleb, and Asheron sported, complete with his long black hair tied back into a sleek, neat ponytail. And by the stern expression on that face, nothing got past those sharp, intelligent, almond-shaped eyes that seemed to see through him. Like the Dark Hunter Asheron, this stranger appeared young, yet the air between them sizzled with enough arcane power that it said this man had been around a whole lot longer. Centuries upon centuries. Upon centuries. He might even be older than Asheron. Maybe even closer to Caleb's or Dagon's prehistoric age. And that was disconcerting, especially as the Malachi powers inside Nick saw him not in the black t-shirt and jeans he currently wore, but in Keiko armor, wielding a naginata in the midst of battle against a group of Dramonk demons. His skill in that fight was unnerving, but not nearly as much as the next image that quickly flashed through his mind. This was one of a crap-your-pants-sideways level of terror. No longer dressed in armor, he wore the guise of a Zeitjager, the creepy, creepy, raven-esque demons who were in charge of monitoring time and anyone who would abuse it. More than that, Nick saw him pulling off the bloodied plague doctor mask they all wore to expose his eyes with an all-black sclera. Yeah, just what I needed today, to have another run-in with those beasts. The one he'd had a while back had been enough for this life. Nick really didn't want another. Ever. Simi, however, appeared immune, as always, to the scary thing in front of them. In fact, she ran over and hugged him. 'Cause, yeah, that was a normal thing for someone to do. In nightmares only.
Akritashi! I got someone for you to meet!
Nick cringed at the thought. Honestly? He'd rather meet his mom 3 hours after curfew, reeking of alcohol and wearing her best shoes. On a Sunday night. After missing Mass. A slow smile spread across the man's face as he returned Simi's exuberant hug. Neither friendly nor sinister, that smile managed to hover somewhere between those two things.
Nick, good to see you, little buddy. Wasn't expecting the Malachi to come waltzing into my house today.
Oh yeah, that wasn't the least bit unnerving. Nick let out a sarcastic laugh. Dude, do I know you? His smile turned a bit warmer, which was even scarier somehow.
Takeshi, we've met in your future. Many times.
Okay, Nick was even more uncomfortable. That's supposed to make sense to me? Simi laughed.
You wanted to travel through time? Takeshi do it lots and lots. Sometimes he lives backwards even, though we not supposed to,
she whispered.
So we not tell people about that.
Ah, that explained it. Sort of. Yet no. Nick was completely lost and confused. Cocking his head, Takeshi scowled.
So, what have you screwed up now, kid?
Nick pressed his hands to his temples as his head began to ache from trying to keep up and understand what was going on.
Okay, I'm really on the losing end here, 'cause I'm not sure what you're asking, or even where I am, or what's going on.
Screwing up for him was like an Olympic sport. He did it so much and so spectacularly that he didn't even think about it. Sometimes, like now, he wasn't even aware that he'd done it. At least not until Cody or his mom stopped talking to him for a day or two and stink-eyed him every time he got near them and left him every bit as confounded as Takeshi did on what Nick could have done to piss off everybody. With a real laugh, Takeshi shook his head.
I know you, boy. While I don't live my life in a straight line, you do. and we shouldn't be meeting like this. At least not now. So for you to be here means you've screwed something up. What have you done?
You see what I was talking about, babe.
Nick choked at the last voice he'd expected to hear. But it at least answered the most probing question that had been eluding him for weeks now. Where one of his generals and protectors had vanished off to. Nashira, what are you doing here? For that matter, how had she gotten to this dimension? Why was he even surprised at this point? His yokai grimoire being literally manifested in front of them, with long, white blonde hair that belied her own Japanese heritage. Nashira had vivid purple eyes that were set in a beautiful, elvish face, complete with pointed ears that peeked out from her snow-white hair. Graceful and lithe, she moved like the wind, and usually spoke in riddles that gave Nick more questions than answers. And a resounding migraine, he was sure, was a brain tumor the size of a bowling ball. At least, that had been true in the past. Today, however, she answered like a normal human, and not some pestilence demon sent to make him crazy.
I came to see my husband.
When she touched Takeshi on the shoulder, and his harsh gaze softened, Nick's jaw fell south without any effort on his part.
Pardon?
Takeshi took her hand into his and kissed her knuckles. Then he pressed her hand to his cheek and held it there as if it were some sacred object.
It's true, and I'm told that I owe her presence here to you. For that alone, Malachi, I'm willing to give you a great deal of slack and latitude.
Nick turned his gaping stare toward Simi.
Did you know about this?
That Akritashi married? Well, yeah. Don't everybody?
Given that Nick didn't know Takeshi at all, no. But he knew better than to refute Simi, as the demon didn't like that, so instead he turned back to them and tried not to gape. Nashira smiled.
I was an oracle long before I met Takeshi.
Okay, he'd go with that, but it still left him with one burning question. So you really were a Zeitjager? The fact that Nick knew about that part of his past didn't appear to surprise Takeshi.
An exceptionally long time ago I wore that garb and played that role, yes.
That wasn't exactly how Nick had been told those Time Sentinel things worked. Rather, his understanding was that you were born as one of them and had to do it forever, like being a Malachi. There was no choice, no escape, which begged one majorly important question. So, how did you get out?
Made a pact with Zev Katorai.
Takeshi said that as if Nick should know exactly who and what he was talking about, but again, he had no clue. Maybe he should have been paying closer attention to all those grim lessons after all, and not ignoring the ancient being who hated him. There had been a reason why his father had sent Grimm to tutor him, other than as another form of creative abuse. Who?
The god of time, who was in charge of us back in the day.
Ah, but still told Nick nothing, as he'd never heard that name before. It wasn't exactly something they referenced in his manga or fighting games, and God forbid they ever covered something useful in school. From the bitterness in that tone, I take it that he screwed you over somehow?
No. His sister Tiva did. She's the untime to his time. And unlike her brother, she can't stand to see anyone happy.
As a chaos goddess, she's the one who cursed me into a book.
Nashira's eyes glistened from unshed tears.
It was her way of keeping me away from her husband. For no reason other than she was a jealous harpy.
Man, that sucked. Nick couldn't imagine anything worse than to be banned from Cody.
Well, maybe being locked in Caleb's laundry room with three-week-old dirty football jockstraps. In August. Yeah, his eyes watered just thinking about it. However, he'd veered off topic again. Not that it mattered, as Takeshi was quick to bring them back to it.
You, as Amalekai, never released Nashira before this, in any known timeline or universe. Yet, now she's here.
He sighed.
I knew when she showed up out of the blue that you'd changed something about the past, probably major, but didn't really want to investigate. I was too grateful to have her back, whatever the cause. Now that you're here, I have no choice but to face the fact that you've veered off the highway. So, back to what I said. What have you done, boy?
Nick shrugged with a nonchalance he didn't feel. Stopped a couple of apocalypses, fought a buttload of demons, and managed to stay alive, much to my daily and eternal surprise. Takeshi laughed. And when he did so, Nick scowled as his powers kicked in with some unexpected disclosures.
It's all Tsuneo.
The name was out before Nick could control his involuntary verbal diarrhea. It had a most chilling effect on his host. Takeshi manifested a dagger and had it to his throat so fast that Nick had barely blinked.
I will not be enslaved to you, Malachi.
He growled those words between clenched teeth, his eyes turned an unholy red. Nick held his hands up in surrender. Wasn't trying to. Seriously. He needed to be more careful in the future. Of all beings, he knew the difference between common names and those used to summon, bind, and control demons. Itzal Tsuneo was the one that could be used to summon and control Takeshi. Worse, it could be used to enslave him, the same way Nick's father had once enslaved Caleb and Grimm. I would never do that to anyone, dude, really. Not into using people or demons. Nashira placed her hand over Takeshi's and pulled the blade from Nick's throat.
He's telling the truth, Neo. Ambrose is not his father, or any of the others. It's why he freed me when he didn't have to.
She leaned forward to whisper loudly in his ear.
Kill him, husband, and you know what horror will grow to power in his stead.
You are ever my wisdom, Shira.
He dissolved the dagger, yet continued to glare at Nick. Nick glanced over to Simi. She didn't appear to be the least bit concerned by Takeshi's violent outburst, so much for her protecting him. Or she knew Takeshi really meant that he wasn't going to kill him. Hoping for that, he let out a nervous breath. Okay, then. At least now we know your parents didn't really name you Bob. Which was the English equivalent to Takeshi, not so much in meaning as just in the routineness of it. Takeshi finally laughed.
You're not as stupid as you look.
Nah, thankfully, right? And what can I say? I'm addicted to manga. Nick winked at him. And since you're not gutting me, I'm here to understand what was broken and how. Most of all, I want to repair it. No sooner did he finish speaking than the room around them lit up with transparent and elaborate charts and lists that hovered in midair. It was a spectacular display, like something in a science fiction movie, only much better done, and a lot brighter and more intricate.
What is this?
Nick breathed in awe of it.
The timeline of your life.
Nick's jaw dropped yet again. It was like looking out into a foreign galaxy. Or the inside of a computer. Some spots were brighter than others. Some were white, some blue, some red, and others orange. All were punctuated by writing he couldn't read, which was never supposed to happen to him. As the Malachi, he should understand all languages and writing.
What do the different colors signify? The orange ones are your pith points.
Those were the virtually unchangeable events. Things that were for the most part set in stone, and that could only be moved with the most catastrophic consequences and Herculean efforts.
Blue
are the ones that will forever change your core personality.
Takeshi cut him a sarcastic grimace.
Believe me, you don't want to tamper with those. Red are the ones that define your character.
Takeshi grinned.
Some of those you might want to consider changing.
Thanks. He didn't comment on Nick's interjection.
White is your original path. Yellow are breaks where you veered from what your timeline once was.
Crap. There was a lot of yellow, and yet while it veered away a bit, it always looped right back to its original course, like a snapped rubber band. Kind of weird, really, because from what Nick could see, he hadn't really changed anything. It was what Ambrose had said. For everything he tried, it went right back to where it had started. Nothing ever really changed. The lines stayed basically where they'd been. Time didn't want to be changed. It fought back with a vengeance. Nick stepped closer to the lights. How can you see all this? Simi tisked at him.
He is Zeitjager, silly demon boy. They can always see the time maps. It's why the Simid brought you here. These much better for this than them Greek godlings.
It was impressive. He'd give her that. Scary, but impressive. Nick held his hand up to touch the timeline. His hand passed painlessly through the twinkling lights, the same way it would go through some laser light show. The moment he made contact, though, bright green sparks lit up from his hand across his chart. Takeshi sucked his breath in sharply. What'd I screw up now? That was the typical answer whenever things went haywire around him. His features pale. Takeshi shook his head.
All that green.
Yeah, what about it?
Mashira turned as white as her hair. Is that what I think it is?
Takeshi swallowed hard.
Yes.
He met Nick's gaze, and the feral fear that was deep in his eyes made Nick step back from him.
The green is where someone's trying to throw your life out of alignment.
That didn't sound good at all. In fact, it was making his ulcer bleed. Not that he had an ulcer, but at this rate, one might be developing and having babies. Nick swallowed hard. I thought that was the yellow.
No. The yellow is where you've changed it with the decisions you've made, and as you can see, they didn't really alter anything. That green is someone else. Someone who shouldn't have the ability to change anything in your life, and kid, they're shifting your future even as we speak.
Chapter 2. Cyprian froze as a strange sensation went up his spine.
Is something amiss, my lord?
He cut a stinging glare to his obsequious minion. With greasy brown hair and pockmarked skin, the slug demon was repugnant enough. That nasal tone only grated his nerves all the more, to the point it was all he could do not to rip its head off and feast upon its organs.
Where is my mother?
In her war room.
He snorted at the pun, given the fact that his mother was Laguerre, an ancient battle goddess who didn't so much as invent the art of war as she'd perfected it. It was what she lived for. Blood, mayhem, utter and extreme violence. Those were her happy go-to places. Like him. Reversing his course, Cyprian headed for the paneled study that held some of the deadliest artifacts in the known universe. Ancient artifacts that currently included his mother and her ex-husband, Grimm. Cyprian hesitated in the shadows of the doorway as the two of them pored over some matter with great intent. They were ever plotting against someone, many times for no other reason than they'd been given the wrong order at the local coffee shop. Since his mother was a goddess, she didn't appear more than a few years older than his teenaged body, but her beautiful young looks were definitely deceiving, as were Grimm's. Much like Cyprian's mother's long, languid movements that belied her quicksilver lethality, she'd deceived many fools to their graves with her slowness. They never realized just how swift she was to anger or stab. until it was too late. Her dark hair fell to her waist in thick waves. It was a stark contrast to Grimm's lighter shade and stocky, muscled body. Together, the two of them had once led armies over the ancient world, destroying everything and everyone they came into contact with. Good times, that. And why not? They were ancient gods of war and death, the original riders who'd brought those concepts to the world of man and demon. Turmoil and chaos were what they lived for, and what they both sought with every breath they drew forth into their not-so-human bodies. Some thought that only death could defeat war. But Cyprian would take odds on his mother winning any fight between the two of them. She was vicious that way. Not to mention, she cheated. They paused in mid-conversation to stare at him. "Is something wrong?" his mother asked, making no attempt to hide her annoyance over Cyprian's interruption, which made sense, given that she could barely stand her son, and had never glossed over that fact for anyone's benefit, especially not Cyprian's. Indeed, she'd gone out of her way to toughen him up with insults and degradations to ensure that his skin was thicker than any tank brigade on the planet. At the rate she'd set fire to his more tender feelings, he should have bought stock in flame-retardant Kevlar. "Do you not feel it, Mother?" Laguerre hesitated before she punched at Grimm. "He's right. We've been discovered." Rubbing his arm where a bruise was no doubt forming from her blow, Grimm shook his head.
"Not possible. Besides, look again. It's just another noisy Zeitjager who's uncovered our most recent actions. Ignore him, and he'll go away. Or we'll kill him if he pursues it. Either way, it's of no consequence to us. I wouldn't spend 3 seconds worrying over it."
"I'm not so sure about that." Cyprian's gut remained tight with his uncertainty. "What if this younger Ambrose has found another way back to challenge us?"
"So what if he has?"
His mother gave him a tolerant yet irritated smirk.
"It would be centuries before your birth. He has no memory of you or his precious wife, as neither of you had been born yet, and in our time he died in battle only minutes after he learned of your existence. So, even if Ambrose returns here, there's nothing to warn Nick about the future he's trying to avoid. We've shielded it too carefully. None of them have a clear vision of what we have in store for them. Our magic is too strong. Not even his little Nakoda remembers it clearly, thanks to our allies. Everything is working as it needs to. Therefore, we don't have to fear his interference. He knows nothing of his real destiny, or any of those that are truly important. Trust in me."
She said that, but the Ambrose Malachi had already screwed things up by coming to the past so unexpectedly and had forced them to venture here in order to repair the changes he'd wrought that had caused a fracture in their plans. Altered the world where Cyprian had ruled as the grand demon overlord and fulfilled his Malachi prophecy that his father had forsaken. He couldn't allow his father to screw things up again. This was what he'd been bred for, and it was what he wanted. All he wanted. He jerked his chin at the red sphora on the desk near his mother's hand. It had been taken from the Atlantean god Acheron when they defeated him in the guise of Ambrose. With that orb, they had access to all destinies, as Acheron had been born the final fate of everything.
"Have you looked at it lately?"
"At what?"
"To make sure everything is fine." She leaned back in the chair with a peeved glare.
"You doubt me."
Of course he did. The only thing he didn't doubt was the sensation in his gut. That was irrefutable. She was not. More than that, she was expendable. So he decided to call her bluff.
"Well, if you're so sure, can we not go home? Why are we still in this godforsaken time period if all is right in the universe, as you say? Surely we've spent enough time here."
The light in her eyes went out as the smile faded.
Don't get cheeky with me, boy. I am your mother.
To whom he owed nothing, as her maternal instincts amounted to the size of the head of a tiny pin, which made the Malachi in him rear up at her confrontation.
You need to remember who serves whom, mother. You may have given me life, but I allow you to live, and to serve at my leisure.
He cut a glare to Grimm.
Both of you. Therefore, I suggest you do as you're told, and remember that though I might be in the skin of a teenager...
He exploded into his real demonic body, complete with horns and wings.
It's only an illusion. I am the Malachi, fully formed, and unlike my worthless father, fully aware of who and what I am and of all my abilities. And more than capable of destroying you both, even with your powers combined. Do not push me. Do not cross me. You are both my servants, and nothing more.
Never one to be intimidated, his mother rose to her feet to glare at